Okay. Can we sing this through? It's number 45 in your songbooks. I think we should do all four of them. It's a great little song. Good way to start a Sunday morning, isn't it? I'd like to have us recite the Bond of Union, but before we do, I saw the candle a few minutes ago, but I don't see it now. Where is it? Oh. Okay. Let's stand up and we will recite our Bond of Union. Rachel, start off. I don't have a
profession. We wish to associate ourselves together in the religious community, which affirms that we share our common humanity, that we need one another, and that our futures are inescapably bound together. Together we expand our intellectual horizons, enrich our sensory experiences, and deepen our emotional sensitivities. We would sharpen our ethical awareness and broaden our sense of social responsibility. We would stand tall in our quest for integrity in life, yet not at others' expense. As the prairie stretches out until it becomes one with the sky, let us reach out to touch and be one with the natural world and with one another.
Morning, we're going to deal with the social responsibility part of our bondage union. In the month of May, the Dane County United Way has what they call their Volunteer Recognition Day. And today is going to be our Volunteer Recognition Day of prayer. So I would like to light the candle this morning if I can find the straight for all of the people in and out of Prairie who do volunteer work. For the 400,000 students in the United States who volunteered last year to help others. For the 47% of the United States population who's engaged in some kind of volunteer work. People who have contributed more than $65 million in labor to do volunteer work, we light our candle this morning.
So, we're going to talk about volunteers at Prairie today. And I guess one of the things we want to do first, I'm going to read a short definition of what a volunteer is, because we're going to be asking you later on some of the volunteer activities that you're engaged in, and we're going to... I'm going to write a little piece for the Prairie Fire so everyone who reads the Prairie Fire can learn what we do as volunteers. So we'll work with this definition. To volunteer is one who chooses to act in recognition of a need with an attitude of social responsibility and without concern for monetary profit, going beyond what is necessary for one's one's physical well-being. Number one, you fulfill a need, you do it without pay or with pay, which is not equal to the value of the service that you perform. And you do it, that covers a lot of territory, doesn't it? Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. We'll come back to this later on in our discussion. Let's see if this person is a volunteer. 6-month-old baby who accompanies her parents or his parents to visit senior citizens at a nursing home. Is that a volunteer or is that not a volunteer?
No.
Okay. How about the student who is doing a community service as part of a high school graduation requirement? Lee says a little bit. So you have to balance how much they're doing it because they're helping somebody else or helping something else, and how much they're doing it simply because they're getting paid, and whether the high school graduation requirement is pay or not is something you have to think about.
It too.
Right.
They're receiving it without having to pay for it.
Right. That's right.
And Okay. They're getting experience. I mean, the young person is getting experience in doing something that they wouldn't otherwise get.
Right.
Otherwise,
okay. So there's some remuneration. That this is one of the things that our panel is going to talk about, perhaps, is some of the advantages or the disadvantages of volunteering. And some of the advantages are the experience you get. Anybody want to
include
something
just
else?
Because it's fun.
Okay. Anything, any other advantage? Annis? Okay. Is that pay or is that not pay? Okay. How about advancing your career or getting the experience so that you can go into a paying job?
And you make contacts that way that you otherwise wouldn't.
Okay.
Sometimes contacts are very important.
Most of the time. And what else? How about emotionally or psychologically? Do you get a benefit? Is it beneficial to people that way? How many of you volunteer because you need to fill some time? Because how many people are lonely and volunteer as a means to meet other people or to make friends that have like things that they have in common?
Keep friendships that you established before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mechie?
No, the negative reason that
Okay. Prestige.
Name on board of directors.
And, yeah. Well, is that you're saying that's negative?
Well, there wasn't any hype behind it. It was all kind of building.
But does somebody benefit from it?
Well, no. Except they didn't benefit
either. How about some other negative? How about some negative things in volunteerism?
Mm-hmm.
Say?
They do something and they don't walk through that.
Okay, but then they're not really, they haven't volunteered if they don't.
No, but you and I, I'm not sure.
Okay. Who hasn't? Okay. How about something else? Our panel's going to, yeah.
There's a real negative in volunteerism that's going on in America today. It's called privatization. The federal government, the state government, the local governments are saying, we won't do it anymore because the volunteers will do it.
Okay.
Okay.
And I mentioned before earlier that something like $65 million worth of labor goes into volunteer work. That's money that could be in someone's pocket as wages. And I guess one of the things we're going to talk about here is, you know, would it be would someone pay to do this if the volunteers didn't do it? No, Rosemary, I don't.
It makes a lot of difference,
man. Yeah. I assume that it would, it's probably calculated at the cost of what the level of the volunteer work. A lot of it is minimum wage work, but a lot of volunteer work is also on an executive type level, a professional level. A doctor who goes out and works with, I'm sure they calculate that on what a doctor would earn if they were, had to pay one. Shirley, did you hear? One of the things we want to look at, and I hope it'll come out here, is who volunteers for what jobs. The stereotype has always been that it's the white, middle-class woman who does all the volunteer work. But there is some change taking place in that. Almost 50% of all of our teenagers go out and do some kind of volunteer work. A lot of senior citizens are now getting out and doing volunteer work. And we're finding more and more men who are doing volunteer work. Mechie? The change is, well, I think the change started to take place around 1950s when teenagers, again, got some kind of remuneration. They began to get credit in schools, and it was seen as an educational pursuit. And then some of the, I don't know the number, Mechie. That's what you're looking for. All right, one of the other things we'd like to have you think about is, we talked about why people volunteer, who volunteers, and take a look at some of the aspects of volunteerism. We have three prairie people on a panel here who are volunteers in different groups, and each of them is going to say a few words about the group that they volunteer with and their volunteer work. So let's see, who shall we start with? Julie, how did that end? What organization do you volunteer with?
I am doing volunteer work for an individual shelter in children who are part of the activities we want to be the access to writing children and very relevant as part of the community. The implementation began in fall of 84 in the opening up shelter. This year they are in a great church writing shelter for 20 people at night and also in the community and movies in the community. The reason I'm doing it is because I have some very negative feelings about.
Before you tell us your negative feelings, could you tell us exactly what you do as a volunteer and how many hours you spend?
Yeah. What I do is because of my profession as a social worker, I'm agreed to community intake. And so they have crazy people in the community doing intake for people coming in. So I volunteer one night.
What's intake?
When people come in, they sign in, and if they're new, we ask them a few questions about their circumstances, why they work, where they spend their time, if they don't have any medical problems, do they have any psychological, what is their need, what do they want. People are not appropriate. Very few people are not appropriate. If people come in and are from the back, if they're not able to get along with people, you know, in conjunction with the paid staff, they're going to try and find another resource to have space in this room. So it's relatively easy to do, except the fact that the last job I had, to where I am now, if I work for the city, human welfare, I'm going down there and sort of like leaning back in the place that has some bad memories. So
I never looked forward to no events in my sense, except that we have an obligation to provide the people's basic needs. And in this instance, the federal government, and the county government is not willing to do what's necessary to provide the people's basic needs, such as shelter, including without imposing some kind of invisibility force. So I'm down there helping us meet, and we need the 19th of support, that everybody has a right to a place to live. In a shandy, or a tent, or in the open air, or on a grate.
Okay. About how many hours do you, how much time do you...
About 5 hours.
A month, or... Is there a need for more volunteers? Would you like to... How would one, if one needed to volunteer, wanted to volunteer, or what's involved? What kind of hours and...
Okay, the shelters, yes, they put together a coalition of different agencies, most of the church agencies in Prairie Inn and Borough. Lance has been going down there, and Elise's been down there, and it's
Monday night? We do the fourth Monday of every month. And if anybody wants to come try it out, please give me a call.
Because they need people, other people do is come down, and they have a room where they have a roaster and microwave, and they're serving food, and handing out the blankets, and talking to people. And people usually go down in two shifts, but it's open at 9 to 8 in the morning. And so they divide the time up.
So you could either work, go down and work from 8 to 12, or 8 to 2, or 2 to...
Well, we have such a good group of volunteers from Prairie, we've broken into three shifts, so nobody has to really break up their night too badly. 7:30 to 12, 12 to 4, 4 to 8.
Who would someone talk to if they wanted to? You, Lance, or Mechie?
This is the first year that you'll be open on your lawn. I don't anticipate much difference. Rob Shaking said that he doesn't anticipate much difference either. I don't think there'll be much difference. If there's a place to stay, they'll come to it. You know, sleeping out and open the lawn is there for effect. Because it's provided in such a way, it's very conflicting that, it's not a lot of activity.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have a question for Lou?
I want to call people's attention to the appeal that we ran in Prairie Fire for the drop-in shelter. They're advocating that the county men's shelter should become more like the drop-in shelter and not have so many restrictions and requirements. So it would be fully used rather than dividing it between a shelter and detox.
Right. What can anybody address the question of what are the restrictions and rules at the drop-in shelter that make people go to Grace Episcopal instead of the other shelter?
The county has put quite a bit of money and restrictions on that, and basically things for people that were maybe eligible for general assistance. They limited the amount of time they could stay there, and originally it was a week, and perhaps they can get an extension. I've got several people that if they needed an extension, they had to put out to the Kane County Social Services every day to get another voucher to have it extended, that they would ask. They were required to care of having interviews, several interviews, meeting group meetings, meeting them by, used to be 8 o'clock tonight, I think they were arranged so that they have to be in by 9. It was a very controlling atmosphere. They had people in their intimate wisdom had decided they knew what was best for people who were on general assistance. But because they were poor, they had the right to say, go here, come here, do this, do that.
In the Grace Episcopal shelter, there's you can stay as long as you want, or
it was that you could stay as many nights as you could. I believe that they're trying to implement a policy that if you're eligible for any services, it's appropriate that you go and apply and try and use those services. So part of what they're trying to do is to try and push the county into being less restrictive. You know, that many of the people that are being senior would be eligible for general assistance. Because in some senses they have a more pleasant environment. They have a gym where they have a hot meal, they have some recreation facilities, they have some staff who are there, you know, to try and help people with paying housing. And some other things. Bobby, you know more about it than I do.
I'm going to move on to one of the other volunteers and just simply say that Julie will be here, and Lance, and I guess Lee and Bob, so that if any of you have questions later on, I hope to leave some time at the end of the program so that you can talk to different people who are involved with different volunteer groups so that you can get more information. And maybe if anyone's interested in utilizing their spare time, what's that? They can talk to someone. Lance, how about your project that you're going to talk about?
Well, okay, I chose to talk about the Peace Project and what I've done there as a volunteer. I've worked with several other organizations, but the Peace Project has been such a unique and rewarding experience. I wanted to share that. Organization 4 years ago when we came into town, and I went to the first of the Peace Festival, the last Peace Festival, and I found myself and my mom a lot of very loving parents and hopefully were trying to keep things in perspective. My ideas of peace before that had been mostly thoughts of anti-war. Talk to people I would never ever talk to otherwise, I don't think, or some of them, and gave me a real different perspective about religion perhaps, and I started to get more interested in becoming more part of the Peace Project, and this last fall I was elected president of the Peace Project, and now I'm kind of the lead coordinator for this year's Peace Festival effort, and we've already had some meetings. It involves things like getting in touch with people, plugging people in, basically, is what I'm doing, helping people to do what they want to do. Some people want to do workshops and organize them. Some people want to organize music. Some people want to handle the money. Somebody wants to do the universal worship service. The good part that I'm finding is that I get to empower people to learn about maybe doing things they haven't done before. Let them help them do things that they have had no opportunity to do. And that now is taking almost an hour a day worth of meetings. I'm also with the Peace Project for about 2 years with. I'm regularly with the dancers, so I'm fundraising activities right now, putting these on staff. And that's also been very rewarding. Learning really how to run a business is about 26 of us, 25, 26 of us that run volunteer days. We run an ongoing event every Friday night, and we learned a lot about talking about money. We run meetings on consensus. We have to manage personnel and different questions come up, things we have to decide. So I'm learning about running a business there, really. I've made a lot of friends. It's been very educational for me through the Peace Project. The only negative thing that I can really think of is that I only got 24 hours. And it drives me crazy sometimes to be so busy. And that's the only negative thing I can think of. And if anybody wants to know more about it or take part,
I think when Julie spoke, I didn't mention it, but did you have a sign-up sheet or something that you were? Did you have a sign? Were you bringing sign-up sheets? Oh, okay. All righty, Lou.
Hidden behind.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a member of Alliance for Animals, and we have been doing this for 20 years, and we have been doing it for all volunteer, statewide organization of people with a headquarters here in the area. Some of the exploitation and abuse of animals. And I guess we feel pretty intense and about our animals because we see animal abuse in not, you know, kind of a global sense. We see it as an example of violence in our society in general, somewhat equivalent to violence against the land and violence against children and violence against women and violence against men. That in some small way we're helping to eliminate some of the violence in our society in general. And if you look at it that way, it seems very important. Also, because animals are affected almost every day in our society and abused so heavily in our society, we feel a great need to get out there and try to do something about it. There are four basic areas of concern that we have. One is to somehow lessen the effect on animals by research labs. And we have a stand on that, and most of our activities are of an educational nature. We also have joined with national organizations. For instance, you might have read about the closing of the Generelli lab, the head wound lab at the University of Pennsylvania, and we participated to some extent in that closing of that lab. I can talk further about our position on research and animals. But I won't do that right now. Another area of concern that we have is factory farming. And we are in sympathy with the family farming techniques that are used. Most of them are fairly humane for animals. But we're very concerned about factory farming techniques, especially in the poultry industry. And some of these are heavy confinement and very much stress on the animal. The veal industry is another example of that. That has extensive stress on the animal from the moment it's born, essentially until it dies in a slaughter. This brings into concern the transportation of livestock, the slaughtering techniques of livestock, and as a result, many of our members are vegetarians or become vegetarians shortly after joining. Another area of concern is animals used for entertainment. We spent a lot of time this year, that was one of the things that I worked on, was lobbying the legislature to defeat the fair mutual betting on horses and dogs that passed the legislature this year. First time since 1972 that this has passed. And it, in order to have pari-mutuel betting in horses and dogs, you must have, as you probably know, two consecutive years that the state legislature passes. Both houses must pass the exact same bill, and also it must pass a statewide referendum where the people express their interest in it. We worked very hard. We had probably the best material that was handed out to any legislator this year, giving all of the various problems connected with not only animals but also social concerns and business concerns, financial concerns that the state should have before going into gambling, but they passed it anyway. Another area that we are concerned with is sport and recreational hunting and trapping. And of course we're opposed to it, and we try to lessen the effect of animals by these kinds of endeavors that people are engaged in, which basically is killing animals for the fun of it, and sometimes for a small amount of profit, as evidenced by trapping. And so these are our basic concerns that we have, and we have people that are on all levels working to lessen the effect of animals by these activities. My particular job, I'm on the legislative committee, which is just a small part of what is done by Alliance for Animals, but basically I gather data and fact sheets and lobby at the state legislature to either amend certain bills to make them more palatable to the animal welfare movement, or we also introduced some legislation this year that one particular bill increased the penalties for people who intentionally abuse animals, and that's clearly stated, you know, what we mean by that in the legislation. It did pass. We worked on several other bills, including the lead shot bill, including some changes in the bear hunting procedures that were done. They were done in Wisconsin, and you learn a lot of things in this movement. One particular quote that's a favorite of mine by a state representative says, said, Lou, we run this state like a big game farm. You don't want to change that, do you? And so this is the way it's thought of. Wisconsin is a big game farm, and that's the way it is, and you better not try to change that. So that's basically what I do. I spend probably 5 hours a week on these types of things, and it isn't something that you just choose to do. It's something that once you know about, you feel a desperate need to get involved and do, because the suffering is so great and so rampant and so extensive a part of our society that we just take it for granted. Everyone assumes that animals will be abused. It's okay in our society, and we're out there saying, no, it's not okay for the creatures that cannot speak for themselves.
Very eloquently. Okay. Let's have a few minutes where you can perhaps ask our panelists some questions if you'd like to. Anyone curious about anything they've said, or Rachel?
Lou, I would like for you to talk about your participation in the black bear here. That was, I thought, very interesting.
Well, black bear hunting was a matter of public concern because in the last few years, except for last year, 1985, about one-third of the black bear were being taken each year. If that continued, even the DNR and the Conservation Congress said in 9 years we would have no black bear in Wisconsin, they would be totally extirpated from the state, as they were years ago. There are two main ways of hunting black bear, if you don't know. Both of them. One is called baiting, and what they do is months before the black bear season is they dump bait from pickup trucks at bait stations, and then during the season, the guy sits up in a tree, and when the bear comes, he shoots it. That's one way. The other way is, that's the legal way, is taking bear with packs of dogs. Now, these are special dogs. They're trained. The hunter takes great pride in his dogs. There are about six of them in a pack. They're allowed to have six by state law. They go out with lots of guys, usually men, and these dogs, and they chase the bear for anywhere from 1 mile to as far as 20 miles during the day, chasing it until the bear gets totally exhausted. It goes up a tree, and then they shoot it out of the tree. Okay, so that's bear hunting. the state of Wisconsin, DNR, and the Animal Welfare Group, and the Conservation Congress decided that even the bear hunters agreed that we must limit bear hunting, or we weren't going to have any more. So we decided to institute what the DNR calls a harvest permit system, what the animal welfare people call a kill permit system. We differ on terminology. And there will be approximately, because the bill passed this year, about 800 kill permits issued to hunters. All of the controversy came when the state of Wisconsin decided, well, there's only going to be 800 of these guys hunting, and so all of these dogs are going to be sitting idle. Isn't that a shame? So let's have a pursuit permit. So there's a kill permit, and if you get one of those, you can kill a bear. If you get a pursuit permit, you can run around with your dogs and chase them for the total season, which is now 14 days. You can chase the same bear, you can chase a different bear. Chase the bear up the tree, down the tree, let it go, chase the dog, and let it go. Can't kill it. You can't kill it.
How is the bear supposed to know which permit to
The animal welfare people said, this is giving people a license to abuse animals, to stress animals. Since the bear hunting is done prior to in the hibernation time, the females are pregnant, the sows are pregnant, we say it stresses the animal unduly for no valid purpose whatsoever, and it's a bad precedent to allow people to chase animals for fun of them. So finally, after much to do, which meant last year we had no bear season at all because we couldn't agree on that, that was nice. This year, I think, I'm not totally sure, but I must check for sure, like, hopefully. I think this amendment passed that limit all the pursuit people must accompany someone with a harvest permit. That was the final compromise. So now the pursuit people cannot pursue bear unless there was someone who has a harvest permit or a kill permit, and then the bear will eventually be shot, since they're almost always killed, since you only have to shoot it out of a tree.
Takes a lot of kill, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Courage, too.
Yeah. They're big, burly fellows.
You had your hand up first.
Each hunter that has a permit can have six dogs?
Yes.
So they can have 30 dogs or something?
They can only have six dogs in a party. Yeah. They have to split up their tiny party and go in different directions.
I find that young children and young adolescents are very sensitive to these issues, and I wonder if you have anybody that comes or any part of your work is going in the classroom.
Yep.
Can we present these issues to you?
Let us know where you'd like us to be and what you'd like to talk about.
Okay, I saw another hand right here.
Yeah, I'd just like to say something about this animal thing a little bit. I recently read a book by Barney Mollick called The Sea of Slaughter. It discusses the issue from a long-term perspective. Mollick is well known as a writer sort of in defense of animals from Canada, and he lives up in the on the southeastern coast of Canada. And what he's done is he's chronicled the change in the animal population in that area from the time that Europeans first started to come there until the present time. He explains the laws and how things happen. It's the type of book that if you read it, it will make you very, very mad, very angry.
Okay.
He wrote Never Cry Wolf, too.
Right.
What's the name of the book?
It's called Sea of Slaughter.
Okay. Now, I'd like the question to address problem of volunteerism rather than the problem of animals. Is that your question, Dodie? You have a question on volunteerism?
First, a statement, and I'll turn into a question. The nature of my volunteerism has changed over time, probably because of human limitations, like need for sleep and sort of. And I'm just wondering if you have experienced that too, if the nature of your volunteerism has changed and why. Anybody who wants to?
Yeah, I think there was a period of time where I was probably quite over-involved in a number of different things. And I had to learn to limit what I did. And I think one of the reasons I limited is because my work is demanding and everything like that. And so my feeling was sort of I gave it the office. You know, they had a lot of my heart and everything was involved in the kind of work I do, so I really did limit the kind of face-to-face volunteer work. Until I think about it, I'm going, yeah, I mean, we've done our share here at Prairie. We can have both served on the board here at various times. This is volunteers brought. I was exceedingly active when we organized the union, and that was sort of work related, but that was taking probably 5 to 10 hours of my time a week outside of work. Particularly the last year up until July when I left my job. That's more than demanding. And at the present time, I'm also working, and I think it's volunteer work with the Democratic Party, because I don't have time to get into everything I'd like to get into, you know, like MPs, environment, social services, supporting community support programs, people in illness. And so I decided that I need to focus my work on, and I need to put it where hopefully it would be the most effective. And sometimes I get to say no, and I get, you know, every week it's either work or money. And part of me feels like I'd rather pay taxes to have somebody get a living wage to do some of the things that need to be done. You know? And the only way I figured out to try and force that issue is to not provide it. You know, because if you provide something, then you're meeting the need, and then there's not the pressure for someone else to do it. So that's kind of the dilemma I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to
get out of that spot.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask a question of the panel, and then I'm going to move on to the next part of the service. But in the three volunteer activities that have been discussed, who thinks that what you're doing free of charge would be taken care of if you were not volunteering? Now, Julie, obviously, if no one volunteers to do the shelter, your feeling is it's somewhere that money would be provided to do that? Or do you think that?
I think I'm doing it because I don't think it will be.
Okay.
You know, that's why.
Lance, how about...
Well, obviously, there wouldn't be an answer for a peace festival if the people would do
yeah.
it. And the world wouldn't end, but...
Well, it might end sooner.
I don't know. What we're really trying to do is educate people on a lot of different levels, and I see that kind of education is growing in our school system. Very slowly, but I think because people have chosen to take action and create maybe a need by their activities, show that there can be something done to educate people and that there is a need for it, then in turn maybe the systems through government and through our schools pick up on that need. So I think it's kind of working in a little different direction.
Lou, do you feel similarly that? Do you feel that if your program goes on, you would educate people so that the schools or some other group would take over your?
Well, that's been shown by the past, by history, through that naturally nothing can be done.
Okay.
Unless people make it very uncomfortable every time they do that, that's about it.
Okay. Now, I'm going to stop the questions a minute because I want to, I'm sorry, Rachel, maybe we can get back, but I want to do... Oh, that out here, there are loads of you who volunteer. These are not the only three people in Prairie who are spending their time volunteering. And we'd like to know what some of the rest of you volunteer at. So what I'd like to do now is have you form some smaller groups of about 8 each. So if, say, for instance, the back 2 rows, if you would turn your chair around and form a little group of about 8 or 10 there, and maybe we can get 3 little groups on this side and 3 small groups on this side.
We're not going to list what everyone does.
Yes, we are.
We've only got about maybe 10 minutes to do this, so we're going to have to work kind of rapidly. If each group would select a moderator, a facilitator, and I'm going to give
give you a couple of sheets of paper here. Please choose someone with good handwriting. Then I would like to have you go around the circle and find out what kind of volunteer work the people in your group do. And if we come up with someone who's doing something that's unique or different or that you find very interesting, you might want to tell us about that at the end of this. Now, one of the things that we find is that people tend to be very altruistic. And people are doing lots of things that they forget are volunteer activities. So we're going to kind of, I'm going to kind of give you some categories here. We'll see how you think, how many of you fit into these different categories. You all have each spokesperson? I'm going to list some of the categories that you might want to think you fit into. First of all, we have not mentioned any of the people in Prairie who I think there are lots of us very active in, say, governmental or politic types of organizations that you volunteer for. Please make sure you list that, those. City, county, community boards, neighborhood associations, committees, commissions, county supervisors, and so forth. Okay. Educational activities. Do you teach someone free of charge? The caretakers and helpers, those of you who work in health fields, you help children of the handicapped or the ill or the aged, etc. Religious organizations. Don't forget all the people in Prairie, all the committees you work on in Prairie and fundraising. Many of you do fundraising for an organization. Schools, PTA, and that kind of thing. And environmental issues, political issues. So you may think of some others that might start you off.
You want to say ours?
Yes. Okay. What you volunteer for, how many hours you put in. I walked around the room and I couldn't believe how long someone was listening. You all, hello out there. Hello. Time to report. Okay, what I'd like to have you do, we're going to have the spokesman tell us very briefly what kinds of organizations the people in their groups are volunteering for. What kind of volunteer activities? The hours that people put in, does that you'll give to me. I'd like to have the sheets when you're finished. I understand I may have some trouble interpreting all this letter. How about the group in the back?
Well, actually, we didn't get a chance to time limitation to get all the hours that everybody put in, but we did have the biggest group we had were religious, educational, and government political.
Okay. How many people in your group are doing volunteer work for religious groups? I take it this is Prairie. Prairie volunteer.
We have 9 people doing that.
9 people, okay. And the other one was what?
Educational.
Okay, what are some of the things that people do in educational?
We also have the Alliance for Animals. We have volunteer writing lab, parent-teacher group, vet care, Lions Club, schoolwork, peace project, teaching, family counseling.
Okay. Let's move.
7 people in that category.
7 people.
But we also had one. We also had a few people doing home care and some doing fundraising also.
How many people are involved in fundraising?
One.
And how many, what the caretakers, what would that home care be like? What kind of, when you said someone's
babysitting,
doing home?
Giving blood, babysitting for grandmother, doing music for nursing homes.
Okay, how much, now that, the music, I have a category here, art, theater, and music, so I'll put, is that one?
Two people doing that.
Two people? And how many that were the caretakers?
We had four.
Okay.
We also had government political, I don't know if you've got numbers on that.
Government, okay.
We have, how many people? Three people doing that.
What, and what were they doing in government?
We had somebody who did, was on, in government office in Millvale. One person who was on the National Task Force for Sexual Discrimination and also as a newsletter for that same issue.
National what?
Newsletter for sexual discrimination.
Okay.
And we had one person who was on political action committee and neighborhood association and also on legislative committee.
Okay. What neighborhood association? Okay, and what was the one right after that, you said?
From the legislative committee that Judy's also on.
What's the legislative committee?
For my work.
You don't want to tell us what that is?
Physical Therapy Association.
Okay.
Legislative committee.
Okay. Let's move over to Rosemary's group.
Yeah, I don't know whether we understood you correctly because we did a little differently. We weren't trying to amass the largest total because we were trying to hit on the most recent activities
okay.
that are most important to us. So under government political, we had two. One serves on a great number of government boards of various kinds and another works with the community action.
Can you tell us what some of the government boards are that people are working on?
Well, the ones I do is energy assistance, generally. The state and the county have different committees and boards that I end up being on, so
okay.
Welfare related.
All righty. Any?
We have three who listed social services, their primary activity. One of them is related to hospice care, one of them is related to family enhancement, and the other was an activity that was both that and something else.
So three people that were involved in that kind
and
of
that, for whom it's a major activity at this time. That's what we asked people to do, was to get the one that was their major volunteer activity within the past year.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted was, I want to know how many activities people are involved in, not what their most important activity is.
Right, and we didn't understand that. So.
Okay. If you can buzz around and get some more information for
okay,
me
sure.
before you hand it in, I would appreciate it. How about this group that Jim Novak is in? I don't know the...
March 6th.
March.
I guess one of the... we didn't exactly do it under those categories, so I'll take a second to count, but one of the comments that I think is a real valid one is that a lot of our ideas about volunteerism are you have to do it in some big community way, and that's not the only way that it's effective, like that monetary contributions to organizations really important because you're making it possible for other people to do that if you don't have enough time. Okay, for, I guess, educational, we have, well, can I count later?
Right. I'm more interested in what people are doing than how
okay.
many.
Well, we have people who are orientating new graduate students, and we have people who are orientating people who speak Japanese to tutor them English. We have people who are...
So someone is...
Tutoring Japanese students.
So, okay, so teaching.
We have people in the community band. We have people who've served on life and drug crisis intervention, women's crisis hotline, served in their co-op house, run for aldermen, served on finance committees, both here and at a prison. We have people who have helped people write books, helped to edit a book on how to change society. We have a gentleman who served on the board of directors for the Humane Society. And I guess that's it.
Okay. Let's go to this group. Who's Betty?
Well, we have a quite a good mix. There's lots of people doing more than one thing, so it's hard to say education. But we have Amnesty International, homeless shelter, retired senior volunteers, religious board, printing. You know, for every organization in town.
I wonder who that is.
Working in the library system, like 5 hours a week with children, teaching English to foreigners, Japanese people, telephone committee for everybody in the town, play music for benefits all over everywhere, fixing things for people who are need repairs, free, you know, sanctuary movement. Working with children behind in school, arthritis society, helping my blind Nigerians doing advocacy things, recording programs at Prairie, after computer lab after school, telephone recording, trade union committee, women's movement, Wealth Now, Wisconsin Women's Network, Coral Wood
Wow. You forgot something on that? No editorial comments.
We have a young person on here, but didn't get down what he said.
Oh.
And I think it's important, because he was the youngest person in the room. Sorry about that. And couldn't think of what he did to volunteer, and I kept thinking, my short one, I said, haven't you ever carried anything for anybody?
Okay.
And then he got to thinking, and I don't think young people all often realize how very helpful they can be.
Well, that's one of the things I said. A lot of people volunteer and they don't realize that they're volunteering. Let's hear from this group right here. We're running late, so I don't mean to rush you, except I was supposed to have finished 5 minutes ago.
Okay, so I will take less than a half a minute. We had people that volunteered for Prairie. We had one person who is an attorney, so she's volunteered for many things related to legal things and spends 20 to 40 hours a month doing that. That was something outstanding. We had several people participating in neighborhood associations. That's Dunn's Marsh, and I don't know what yours is.
Regent Neighborhood Association.
Several people serving on government boards. People singing a civic chorus, for example, is another, a different kind of thing. And one-to-one counseling in the workplace. I think maybe a lot of us get involved in that and didn't put that down.
Very briefly, what were the government boards that were being worked on?
Police and Fire Commission.
Who's the Police and Fire Commission person? Yeah, okay.
For Fitchburg.
Dorothy. I mean, Pat, I don't know why I keep calling Dorothy.
Library Board.
Yeah.
Equal Opportunity Commission.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to bring this to a close, and as you can see, Prairie Pete, no wonder when the committee on committees starts trying to find somebody to hold an office, no wonder they have trouble. I mean, this is mind-boggling. Let's hear it for all of the volunteers in Prairie. We're going to sing a song. Do you want me to leave that out, Mary, since time
we have the announcement? I want to sing a song.
Okay. I would like to have all of the yellow sheets from the... Thanks.
We have many announcements today. I'm going to try and go through them pretty quickly.
You want to get back?
Can I take
sure
it?
Sure can.
Good morning. I'm Rick Recking, the president of Prairie. Welcome, all guests. I think I'll allow you to escape with anonymity today. We usually introduce them, but we're running out of time. I'd just like to run through these announcements, and I'll try and get to the people that need to speak as well in a moment. A member of Prairie, K.K. Anderson, who's nominally a member, she doesn't attend very often and has lived out of town for the last year or so, has moved back to Madison. But the announcement I have is that her son Barry died on Monday. He was a 25-year-old man living in Detroit who had a history of depression. Unfortunately, he took his own life on Monday morning. There will be a funeral service this afternoon at 3 p.m. in McFarland. I have directions. If anybody would like to attend with me, they're surely welcome to. There's a youth conference in Milwaukee, May 9th and 11th. It's on the bulletin board in back. There are nominations to the UUA Central Committees for the 1987 through 89 biennium, something like that. That's on the back. There are single week at Lake Geneva bulletins at the back. There's something called homecomings. If you're planning on traveling around the United States and would like to stay with other Unitarians, there's a group you can contact with. That's in the back. The Quincy, Illinois UU Central American Peace Group Committee has sent us some information, which I posted on the Social Action Committee, if you'd like to see what other Central Midwest District groups are involved in. There's a foster care homes crisis in Dane County for people who think they'd like to participate in foster home care. They're having a meeting. It's either this Wednesday night or Wednesday a week, and that's posted on the Social Action Bulletin. Kitchen cleanup, we're okay this week. You might sign up for next week. Okay, now to some of the other ones. Those are mine. There is a meeting at First Society at 11:30, which I'm going to try to attend, having to do with the extension into a third society in Madison. Other interested persons, please attend with me.
Do you know about these things in advance? Please put them in the Prairie Fire.
I get these, you know, in the last week before, I just
that's
can't.
Important, I think, for a while in the Prairie, the third
society. Yes, it is. Okay, Dodie Chaprou has passed around a thing, and she's volunteering to dance. It looks like she's going to make a lot of money, so I said before, don't dance too long, but why don't you dance a couple extra hours there, Dodie? It looks like you'd really raise some money. Elizabeth, you have an announcement.
Yes, I wanted to tell everyone how very sorry I was to miss my last service in my lay ministry last week. My mother-in-law is critically ill and still in the Prince of Square. She's not expected to live in Maine. That's where I was. And I also wanted to mention, that the spiritual discussion meeting this Wednesday at 7:30 will be on the subject of relationships in a very broad sense, because I believe that we are what the connections that we make and the way we focus on those connections. 7:30 here at Cherry. And so if you haven't come before, come if you want.
Lance, you have a couple announcements on the apartheid rally and peace festival.
Yeah, I think I put the wrong word there. There's a rally in March tomorrow, 11:45, starting at the IRS office on East Washington. As most of you know, there's a bill coming up in the House. Probably will be voted on Tuesday about aid to Contras. This is a very important issue. I think a lot of you understand why. This rally march will start at the IRS office and go to Kasten's office, march to his office, and then to Kasten's office. If you can, contact Aspen or Kasten and urge them to have some talk and vote right on these issues. I'll put these on the Prairie Social Action Board, and I hope people are taking the time to look at the Social Action Board, because we put notices of events that are going on like this on that board.
Can Mary Mullen add something to that? Yeah.
If anyone wants to know the telephone numbers of our representatives, I have a little package of information. You really should call them today or tomorrow, because they're going to vote in the House of Representatives in Washington on Tuesday, probably. And every call. I've got about 6 or 10 flyers here with the numbers.
Central America isn't the only place where the United States government is involved militarily.
I just wanted to announce or urge people to volunteer to make a telephone call to the White House regarding the Reagan's wish to take violent action against Lydia. And I have a telephone number for that. If anybody wants it, Derek. I just happened to have asking people to turn their headlights on as a demonstration for opposition to intervention in Libya. I'm not sure how effective the headlights are, but it has the telephone number. This is the main thing. If you call the White House, they're saying they know that the countries in Europe are very unenthusiastic about any kind of retaliation, but they're saying sentiment is overwhelmingly in favor in this country. And I think that made a mistake. We should show them.
Rachel?
We still need more people to volunteer for housing for the delegates for the Central Midwest meeting, which will be here April 18th. So if you can provide beds or space for people, let me know after the session.
Also, I'd like to remind everybody that we will be hosting that North Central Area Conference here at Prairie next week, Friday evening and Saturday during the day until about 3 p.m. There are brochures available with registration slips back there. I urge you all to attend. We'd be that much better off if we unify ourselves in our own area and then in a district. Mary Mullen says garden plots are available nearby. Speak to her. On May 4th, we have a cleanup here, a volunteer day to clean up. No? That's been canceled?
That's different. It's a work party to insulate pipes in the basement. We need four or five people, a work team, and Al Nettleton will be in charge of that.
Okay.
So see Al if you want help.
We had an interesting announcement in Prairie Fire about, a month ago or so, about the numbers of people that volunteered in our religious education program. In the first semester, we had 43 persons that volunteered their time to the RE program. Congratulations to you all. If there is anyone who would like to volunteer in other Prairie committees, you'll find the names and numbers of the committee chairs in the back of the Prairie directory. On Saturday, May 17th and Sunday, the 18th, we'll have our first weekend with the Extension Ministry, Reverend Gordon Gibson, whose picture is posted in the back there. Mary, would you like to announce this?
As you recall, about a year and a half ago, we had a little workshop, and we talked about whether we'd like to grow or how we were already growing and what that meant. Kind of an outgrowth of this, I think, is the Weekend Extension Ministry, which was offered to us by the Central Midwest District. On Saturday the 17th, we've asked that Reverend Gordon Gibson could be up there. We'll meet with the old and new board. That would be in the morning of that Saturday. In the afternoon, we'll meet with the long-range planning committee. And in the evening, this is for all of you, of Saturday, May 17th, all of you are invited to come and just have a social get-together and have a chance to meet him and find out what he's all about and see how he can help us. How we can help him maybe too. Then on Sunday, he's going to be giving the service. On Sunday morning, he's going to do a service called A Prairie Home Companion. We're going to have a potluck that day afterward, and then at 1 p.m. we're scheduling a workshop. He will lead us, and we're going to be focusing on what are the questions we have to answer before we can decide exactly what we want to do? Do we want to build a new building? Do we want to add on to this building? Do we want to not grow? I mean, we've answered some of these questions, but we want to focus on what questions still need to be answered. I know the Long Range Planning Committee has been working a lot on this, but the parish as a whole needs to think specifically on this too. So that'll be probably a couple of hours, hour and a half, 2 hours in the afternoon. All of you are cordially invited.
Two more announcements. One, we do accept donations. We haven't passed the basket because of the configuration we're in. That is in the back to operate this society. And finally, the men's group meets Tuesday the 22nd at Bill Fetzner's house. Marty, excuse me. Yes. Yes, please.
Just a preview of the program next week. I think it's the last in our series of services on working that Pat and I are doing.
title of our program next week is Uncle Sam Doesn't Want You. And we're going to be looking a little bit at employment discrimination. Our speaker is going to be a woman named Miriam Ben Shalom from Milwaukee, who is basically experiencing severe discrimination, kicked out because she's a lesbian and an outspoken one, and has been fighting in a legal battle to get back in. So she's going to be here next week talking about that, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about employment discrimination against gays and lesbians in general. Miriam's a real neat woman. She's a hell of a fighter. I like her a lot. I think you will too, and I hope you'll come.
One final announcement, Mechie. I'm sorry. Okay. Mechie's looking for persons who have ideas or interest in supporting, in generating support and money for financially troubled farmers. It will take cooperation to bring it about. She'd like to meet.
I have an idea.
She has an idea, and she'd like to discuss it. You can meet with Mechie immediately after the program at the stage here. Thank you all.
Rick,
what?
Can I say one quick?
Very briefly, please.
If anybody's interested in having a Passover Seder, see me afterwards.
Sorry, there's so many things here. I missed them. Yeah. Okay, Pat.
Yeah, I'd like to remind people that 2 weeks from today, we are having our parish meeting, and it is absolutely essential that Prairie members attend that. We have to have 30 people here at least in order to have a quorum. We've had a problem with quorums before, and unless you attend, our business is not legal, excluding our election of officers for the following year. Now, do we want to sing?
Sure.
Okay. If you'll turn to page 71, song 71.